On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Could there be more triple-doubles this season than ever before in the NBA? And if so, what's making this all possible? That and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's The Big Number, just as we do every Thursday right here on Yahoo Sports. We've got a big number this week. I'm very excited about it. History is in the making right now. Dan, how you doing, man? What's up?
I'm doing great, Tom. I've got some new hair product working on it. I've trimmed the beard so I feel more aerodynamic, a little sleeker as I move through our podcast. I'm ready to put up some numbers. Tom, what do you got for me this week?
All right, we're going to do a big number that has a lot to do with another beautiful human being. It's Nikola Jokic, okay?
Ooh, me and him, all right, the big two.
This week's big number is 154. That's the number of triple-doubles that we are on pace to see this season, which would break an all-time record. The previous record is 142, okay? We're on pace for 154. Again, that would break the record, and we've got 86 so far this season. A lot of that is from a one Nikola Jokic, who is outstanding. I mean, what he's doing recently is some of the stuff we've never seen in the NBA before. Six triple-doubles in his last seven games as of this recording. He is averaging 30 points, 13.1 rebounds, and 10.2 assists this season. He would become the first big man ever to record or average a triple-double for an entire season if he keeps this up. And of course, he's doing this, Dan, with Russell Westbrook at his side. And so it's kind of fitting that this would be the season that Jokic would get to those thresholds of being a triple-double average for an entire season. Russell Westbrook has done it three times, and Oscar Robertson has done it as well. But Jokic would be the first. He's got 21 triple-doubles this season. Next is LeBron with 9. So that means that Jokic has more than twice as many triple-doubles as the next highest guy. So what I want to talk about here is a couple things. One is we're seeing more triple-doubles than ever, and try to get at the root of that. Why is that happening? Hmm. Well, one of the reasons why is because Jokic is unfreaking believable at basketball.
Right, he's thumb on the scale, right?
Like if he's in the game, yeah, you're going to see historic numbers just about across the board. He's already like, oh, you want me to be Mr. Triple-Double? Oh, what if I become the best three-point shooter in the NBA too? So he's ridiculous. But I think it's also instructive to look at what's behind it, what's driving it. I think while many people are looking at Russell Westbrook as the amplifier to the triple-doubles, statistically, it's actually Christian Brown. Christian Brown being inserted into the starting lineup has really boosted Jokic's triple-double potential. In fact, when he's on the floor, Christian Brown is on the floor, Jokic's triple-double numbers, or at least in the assist column, I'll say, when Russell Westbrook is on the floor, it's 11.4 assists per 100 possessions, according to pbpstats.com. And when Christian Brown is on the floor with Jokic, Jokic's triple-double numbers, at least in the assist column, goes from 11.4 to 14 flat.
Wow.
14 assists every 100 possessions when Christian Brown's on the floor, which makes sense in the sense that he's a great cutter. He's an improved shooter. He's a guy with a high motor, and he has 85 assists from Jokic this season, and that's already almost eclipsing KCP last year, assists from Jokic to KCP. So Jokic, that's one thing. He's been incredible. He's the fulcrum of that offense. He is a planetary system unto himself. But there's this other thing, which pace, we're seeing pace in the NBA, about 99 possessions every 48 minutes, which is about 10 possessions more than we saw in the 90s or the early 2000s, which was the dead ball era. And you didn't see triple doubles very often back then because there just wasn't as many possessions to fill up those triple double categories.
Hey.
So pace is going up, scoring is going up league wide. You're seeing the New York Knicks with the second best offense in the NBA Josh Hart has 6 triple doubles to his name this season. Dan, I'll give you my favorite stat maybe in this whole entire big number episode. Josh Hart has more triple doubles this season, 6 of them, than Dwayne Wade has had in his entire career. 5. Josh Hart, this season, like 3 months of basketball, has done the thing more than Dwayne Wade has done the thing in his entire career. So that is, I think, indicative of all the scoring that the Knicks are doing, that they're handing the ball to Josh Hart to do more playmaking. And he's just kind of this unpredictable guy off the boards, and he can always find shooters and cutters and et cetera. But he didn't have any triple-doubles to his name this time last year, and now he's got 6 of them this season. So it's not just Jokic. It's not just Hart. League-wide, we're seeing this kind of wave ascending in the triple-double column. And as kind of superficial as it is, I kind of think it is a cool story, is this thing that I think we all get excited about when we see the box score, the triple-double stat. It's happening more than ever, Dan. So I guess my question to you is, do you think this is more about Jokic, or do you think this is more symptomatic of a league that is producing more triple doubles as a product of just the way that the playing style is?
I mean, you mentioned the Christian Brown component. I think Jokic is obviously a huge driver of it, just because, you know, if there's 86 and he's got 21 of them, then nearly a quarter of all of them are coming from him, right? So he, as an individual driver of it, is you can't ignore that. But I think it's also, when you mentioned Christian Brown and Josh Hart, I've kind of connected them in my brain, because what does Josh Hart do every time he grabs a defensive rebound? He is like tearing down the middle of the court, trying to drive the ball right down the defense's throat, like half back dive, finish right at the rim, or get downhill, drop it off to somebody trailing with him. What does Christian Brown do whenever Nikola Jokic gets a defensive rebound? Is he takes off. He just leaks out and he is out. Christian Brown leads the NBA in fast break points this season, more than Giannis Antetokounmpo, more than anybody else in the league. And I think a lot of that is because Jokic just looks at him and throws that, you know, those long ball outlet passes, the water polo passes down the floor. And so I think tempo and speed, the willingness to try to like generate the understanding that the earlier you get a shot up, generally the higher efficiency that shot is. You know, I think there's like an understanding that going late into the shot clock is generally bad for your expected points on a possession. So if you can get a transition play, if you can get an early shot up, generally speaking, you're going to be more open, or you're going to be more advantageous. So that goes along with what you're talking about with pace. In addition to just number of possessions per 48 minutes, the average possession is shorter now than it used to be. In Predictable.com, Mike Bowie, we've talked about his work before. This season, the average offensive possession is 11.7 seconds. So that's less than half the shot clock. That's down from last year. It's down from the last couple of seasons. I think you're seeing more teams look to hit the gas more often. And the teams that do it more effectively tend to be some of the best offenses we've seen. And if you've got more possessions, you're getting more shots up or more opportunities to score. There's going to be a basket, there's going to be an assist opportunity, and somebody's going to get credit for those in the box score. It's going to be Christian Brown, it's going to be Nikola Jokic, it's going to be Josh Hart. And then you wind up with more guys rattling up these large sort of outsized numbers that we would have ever seen at any time in the past.
Right, and I think it's important to note that like the guys who are on this list, all right, I'll just read it to you. Jokic has 21, LeBron James has 9, Domantas Sabonis has 7, Cade Cunningham has 7, Josh Hart has 6, Giannis Antetokounmpo has 5. What do these guys all have in common? They're huge. Big dudes, right? The hardest thing to do in a triple-double is not the rebounds or the points, it's the assist. So why are all these big dudes getting these assist totals that we hadn't seen in previous, you know, eras? Well, big reason
why I just got to say we are grandfathering Josh Hart into being huge, and I love that for him and for us. He just in the neighborhood play, like, what do they all have in common? They're 9 feet tall and they can shoot lasers out of their eyes. That's exactly how Josh Hart plays, and I love that. Sorry, go ahead.
What I'm saying is his heart is huge, right? Josh Hart, his heart is huge as a sports writer. Just a sports writer just got its wings by using that analogy there. I think Josh Hart plays big, I guess, maybe, but he isn't. He's 6'4", right? On a good day. So that's a part of the reason why I made that comparison to Dwayne Wade, is like they're similarly sized, but right. Josh Hart in this era is more of a triple-double machine, partly because I think there's more spacing in today's NBA. So I think that's more conducive when there's not as much traffic in the paint, the passing lanes open up and you can find Karl-Anthony Towns or a cutting Mikal Bridges or Jalen Brunson for a kick out 3-pointer in ways that maybe in years past, those passing lanes are closed off and there's just too much congestion to get those passing lanes. Statistically, Dan, a assist double-double occurs a third as often as a rebound double-double in the NBA. So when you're thinking about it and you're saying, well, why are there so many triple-doubles now? Well, a lot of the big men have already gotten the rebounding part, but now it's up to the passing part. And I think the guys are skilled. The players now are much more skilled. Giannis, Jokic, Sabonis in other eras. Maybe they don't come up watching Kevin Durant and LeBron James and not developing those skills. We're having a more heliocentric era now. All of these things are coming together. And there's one last thing that I'll point out, Dan, why we're seeing more triple-doubles now than in history. I do think that shot-making is a big part of this, obviously, with assists. Right. You need assists. In order for an assist to happen, you have to have a shot go in. Of course, you need more shot making for you to get more assists. But you have more control over your rebounds and points than you do assists. And the annoying thing about triple-doubles sometimes is like Jokic will have nine assists and he didn't get a triple-double. And we somehow think that's less of a great performance from Jokic than if he had 13 assists. When he had no control over whether maybe Aaron Gordon flubbed the alley-oop lob that Jokic threw him, or Christian Brown just barely missed that three, or Russell Westbrook barely missed that layup, has no bearing on whether Jokic had a good pass or a bad pass. It's just process and results. So players have more control over the first two categories, and the assist category is a little bit tougher. They're more dependent on their teammates, which is why it's harder to get an assist triple-double on the assist component. So we're having more triple-doubles than ever. We're seeing that Jokic is kind of leading this, but it's not just him. It's guys like Josh Hart, Cade Cunningham, who were not at this time last year getting triple-doubles, and now they are. But we have, after the break, four little numbers from you, Dan, that we're going to dive a little bit deeper into this triple-double boom and what maybe the league will have to do about it, if anything, after the break. Before we get to the little numbers, Dan, do you know the origin of the triple-double?
I think it's from the Latin for three and two.
Yeah. There's it goes all the way back to Socrates, actually. No, it goes right. Back to 1980. Daryl. Yeah. 1980 basketball in the NBA. Magic Johnson was getting double digits in all these categories, and they needed a good way to summarize it and make it a thing. So there's this kind of like origin story. There's like battle between who coined the term first. Bruce Jolesh he was the Lakers PR director, of course, the great Bruce Jolesh. And Harvey Pollack, legendary 76ers, media guru / stat keeper, maybe the most legendary stat keeper in NBA history.
Sure.
They had to kind of like come up with a term when Magic Johnson was doing these amazing things. And Bob Ryan, in an earlier story, even like 1976, he had called it like a triple play in baseball. And these guys came up with, what about a triple double? And so there's kind of like a little fight over who actually owns the rights to coining the triple-double. But I just wanted to throw that out there if you're wondering when the triple-double was actually invented. And what's funny about this is that Oscar Robertson didn't know what a triple-double was when he was getting triple-doubles in 1961 and 1962. Like, think about it. If he knew that Fletch was already happening back then that there was a thing called a triple-double, I feel like maybe he'd be averaging like 40, 20, and 20. Just throwing that out there before you get to the little numbers.
if nothing else, he should be allowed to retroactively trademark the term and profit over every use of it. Although, let's make sure this is exempt from that, because I don't know that we've got the cash to cover that in the accounts based on how many times we're saying it in this episode. But yeah, that is a fascinating entry point into the history of it that brings us into the current tense, the present day, with our little numbers for this week. Four little numbers about triple doubles. First one is 756. That is the winning percentage of players' teams in this season in the games where they've recorded a triple-double. So you mentioned 86 triple-doubles this season, 86 player games with a triple-double. When you've gotten a triple-double, your team is 65-21. Pretty good. You take that certainly as a winning percentage for the full season. And of course, that makes sense. If you have a player who is putting that kind of imprint on the game, scoring, rebounding, facilitating, generating good possessions, all those sorts of things, you're probably doing pretty well. It's generally an outgrowth of a healthy ecosystem rather than like an indication of one person just stat hogging. You know, people can argue about that in individual cases, but I think broadly, you see, when a player gets a triple-double, their team seems to win about 75% of the time. So, pretty good start there. If you needed to make the argument for getting one, there you go. You win 75% of the time.
Yeah, there was that big debate when Russell Westbrook was in his MVP season about whether he was stat padding or whether he was chasing these numbers rather than actually improving his team. And there was a couple of things, if I remember correctly, and Royce Young did great stories about this. One is when Russell Westbrook got a rebound and started a break, the offensive rating of the Thunder was like absurd. It was like 200 points every 100 possessions. Right. So the idea the idea that Russell Westbrook was chasing rebounds at the cost of his teammates, Steven Adams, boxing out and making sure that Russ got the rebound. Well, there's actually a basketball strategy point there. Is Russell Westbrook, you want him having the ball with a full head of steam going down the other way. And also, like, the Thunder's record when he has a triple-double, I think, was much better than when he didn't his year. And I think, like, again, triple-double is also a team stat in the same way that QB wins or pitcher wins is a team stat masquerading as an individual stat. Like, triple-double has a little bit of that flavor in there too, because if your teammates won't hit a shot, it's not that you didn't do a great job setting it up. It's just they can't hit the shot. It's not your fault. So triple-doubles, you need your teammates to hit their shots. And also, I wonder, Dan, I feel like in this three-point era, we should be doing assist points too, because not all assists are the same. So like if you're doing a triple-double and you're setting up 10 three-pointers and you get 30 points for your teammates, quote-unquote, get 30 points, I feel like that's important to note rather than just 20 points if you feed, 10 two-point buckets. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do think assist points should be part of this, but I don't want to ruin the nice round number tidy part of three numbers in double digits.
Yeah, because then we start getting into like quadruple or quintuple, and my head starts to hurt at that point. I also just go on putting a button on the Westbrook point. I like the idea that anybody would be telling Steven Adams that I'm just going to take this from you, and he wouldn't be cool with it. Like, if Steven Adams didn't like something, chances are he'd be able to, voice his displeasure. And I don't know that anybody would be able to argue with him too much, because that dude looks like Aquaman. All right. Postscript here. The best performance in a loss, best triple-double in a loss. You got a guess for who it would be?
Best performance in a loss.
I'm using as my metric here game score, which is basically like single game PER. So ballpark, anybody, any player that you ran through the list of who got the triple-doubles this season, throw a fun name out there.
A fun name. What about... is it LeBron? Is it LeBron?
It's a good guess. And I think, as you mentioned, sort of the forerunner of this kind of big trend where it's bigs who are playmakers doing it. No. It's somebody who went head toe to toe with LeBron James in a final series. Going by game score, it would be a 35-point, 19-rebound, 10-assist, 4-steal, 1-block, 0-turnover masterclass turned in by Jimmy Butler. My name is not James. It is literally Jimmy Butler, against the Detroit Pistons in an overtime loss on December 16th, 2024, which I think was the last time that Jimmy Butler really went after it for the Miami Heat. It's about a month and a half ago and also a lifetime ago. So even the triple doubles that come in defeat can sometimes be memorable in their own ways. Other versions of triple doubles that are memorable, let's go with this. Our second little number is number one. That is how many of the 86 triple doubles this season have been notched by a player coming off the bench. I'm going to ask you again, Tom. You got a guess?
That's got to be Russ, right?
It is indeed Russell Westbrook on November 19th in a big win over the Memphis Grizzlies. And basically is showing Jokic how it's done. And then look at how far Nikola has come since then, now that Russ has shown him the way. And thankfully, we had nobody arguing with one another about who was hogging what. They just won the game. Pretty good solution to that problem. On to our third little number, five. That is how many first-time triple-doublers we've seen so far this season. I'm not going to ask you to do any more guessing. I want you to take a break. The list is RJ Barrett, Scottie Pippen Jr., Tyrese Maxey, Jaime Jaquez Jr., and Ayo Dosunmu. Got two juniors in there. Pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to be a junior. Dad has to have the same name in order for you to get triple-doubles in the NBA.
That's right. It's nepotism in every hire, right? Of those five guys, though, RJ Barrett, Scottie Pippen Jr., Tyrese Maxey, Jaime Jaquez Jr., and Ayo Dosunmu, who do you think is most likely to get another one before the season ends?
It's Tyrese Maxey.
Yes, I mean,
I think that's the answer because, you know, he's going to be shouldering a lot more of the scoring load if Joel Embiid is not going to be playing much this year for the rest of the way. And same with Paul George. But we've gotten, I guess, some good news on Paul George's injury, but I still think it's Tyrese Maxey. And he's just getting better. Like he developed like the best 3-point shot in the NBA. He's going to be, you know, a guy who is, you know, when you look at Tyrese Maxey, his development, he's always added something to his game. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, oh, I'm going to decide to become an 8 rebound per game guy, because that's just what Tyrese Maxey and his glowing personality does. He just keeps getting better and better. But of that group, I feel like Jaime Jaquez Jr. might be the most surprising one. He hasn't had a great year. Was that one in an overtime?
Tom, you've done it again. It was a double overtime game just a few weeks ago, January 6, 2025, against the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento, California. It took 45 minutes and 35 seconds of game time for Jaime Jaquez to get to 16, 12, and 10, but he did get there. Unfortunately, it was not enough for the Jimmy Butler-less Miami Heat they fell to the Sacramento Kings in that game, bringing the Heat to 500 and a 123-118 loss. But Jaime Jaquez Jr., listen, who knows? Maybe there's more big minute, big opportunity, big touch games ahead of him based on the way the trade deadline works out. Who among us can say?
What's interesting, Dan, when you look at the numbers of like the leaderboard of triple doubles this season, way down on the list is Luka Doncic at 3. He's got 3. Part of that is because he's only played 20 games this season. But big picture, we're pacing at historic levels of triple-double this season without Doncic, right? Which speaks to that this is kind of like a C-level change rather than just Jokic or rather than just like Cade Cunningham making the leap. Like Doncic only has 3 of those 86 triple-doubles, and he might be coming back here in the coming days, and we might see Jokic, Giannis, Luka, all these guys ramping up their triple-double marks. And I think, I'd have to double-check this, I think you see the triple-double rate increase as the season goes on, probably because defenses aren't as tight, airtight as the season goes on, as teams tank or as teams, you know, try to play younger players to figure out who they got. But the Scottie Pippen Jr. one, that's great. Scottie Pippen Jr. has a triple-double in the NBA. I mean, that's great. A big reason why Memphis Grizzlies are like the fastest team in the NBA. They get a lot of possessions and they like to run up and down the floor, which means high percentage shots. So Scottie Pippen Jr. with a Y, not an IE like his father. I don't know if you can have a junior if you spell it differently, but that's another story. Scottie Pippen Jr., hats off to you for a triple-double, getting in on the party.
Absolutely. I think my answer is Ayo Dosunmu because I feel like he's going to be the last guy standing in Chicago when it's all said and done. And somebody's going to have to score the points, grab the rebounds, and deliver the assists. But who among us can say? Our final little number this week, it's been such sweet sorrow, 40. That is how many near misses we have had this season. So I'm out here on my Daryl Morey, and I'm against the tyranny of round numbers. We're also going to highlight, as you mentioned earlier, some of those games where it's you got a monster score, a points and rebounds game, but you had 9 assists, whatever. There have been 24 points, rebounds, double-doubles with 9 assists, where a player has had 9 assists. There have been 12 point assist double-doubles with 9 rebounds and 4 rebound assist double-doubles where the player has scored between 7 and 9 points. So they're one bucket away. That's Bam Adebayo, Josh Giddey, Draymond Green, and Russell Westbrook. Guys who I think we tend to think about more for the playmaking and the rebounding than we do the shot making. Not surprising that they would get there. But so we are at this historic pace, as you mentioned, 86 triple-doubles on pace for 154. And we've already got we've also got 40 where a guy was one thing away from getting there. I think it lends to your idea that the pace of play, the speed of offenses, the spacing on the court, the opportunities to sort of, there's more shots, more misses, more opportunities for rebounds, all those sorts of things are putting us in a position where you're pretty much, you're not guaranteed to see one every night, but you got a pretty darn good shot.
Speaking of darn good shot, it wasn't until later in his career, but Jason Kidd has the all-time record of those last ones that you were talking about, where you have right. The assists and the rebounds, but not the points. Jason Kidd, according to StatHead.com, has 11 such games in his career. That is the most all-time. So
imagine
the easiest thing to get in the triple-double category. Jason Kidd, Hall of Famer, coach of the Mavs, great hair coming out of college with bleach hair. He has 11 of them. Draymond Green, of course, is second on that list with 7, which is perfect. You know how I said earlier, Dan, that Jokic is averaging a triple-double so far this season? Yep. First big man ever to do that. If you just look at his through three quarters stats, he doesn't quite average an assist triple-double part, you know, the assist portion. He's averaging, just looking at his first three quarters of the game, no fourth quarter, no overtime, Jokic is averaging 24.2 points, 11 rebounds a game, and 8.6 assists. 24, 11, and 8.6. His first MVP season back in 21, he was averaging basically those numbers, 26 points, 10.8 rebounds, and 8.3 assists. So he's got like a dozen triple doubles before the fourth quarter even starts. And his per game averages, if you remove the fourth quarter and overtime, it's basically his first MVP season. Not quite in the assist column, not quite averaging a triple double, but over his last like 10 games, it's right there. So Jokic, it's just to wrap on those little numbers, it's insane what he's doing this season. Basically doing his first MVP season through three quarters.
Really making us lazy procrastinators look bad by getting all that work done that early. Really, truly ridiculous. Speaking of truly ridiculous, one final one to go out on, 0. That is how many triple-doubles we've had with blocks this season. Get off your ass, Wembanyama. Come on. We gotta move up into the category from 0 to 1. You can do everything else. Get this done for me. You did it last year. Do it this year now. Come back from Paris. Lock in. We need some blocks triple-doubles because those are super weird.
In the words of the great philosopher Hassan Whiteside, I do it with blocks.
I do it okay? with blocks. Got to get the 2K rating up.
One of my favorite players ever. All right, Dan, after the break, we're going to go through the over-under scoreboard and talk about De'Aaron Fox. We did a whole episode on this. Dan, we're going to talk all about this whole trade demand that wasn't. Trade rumors around De'Aaron Fox, where he might go, to kind of revisit our previous big number a couple weeks ago, right after the break. All right, it's time for the big number over-under scoreboard check. And 16 to 14, we don't need to talk about who's winning. I'll just say it's 16 to 14.
I'm happy to say I'm winning. I'm the one who's got two thumbs and is beating Tom Haberstroh, this guy. And it's never going to change. And I'm going to continue riding this line upward forever. Yeah. And so that's fine. We can move on from there. But Tom, are you sure you want to add some more in here? Do you want to really like prolong the beating? Or do you like what would you like to do in terms of over-unders this week?
Yeah, last week we did Victor Wembanyama, shot distance 17 feet. It is at 17 feet flat right now on basketballreference.com. So I'm lazy and I'm not one to like actually track like to the decimal point, like how many
like in the thousandth place, whether that's over 17 or under. I had the under on 17. It's 17 flat. You had the over. So big, big flex point right there in the standings. Zach Edey's been doing a little bit better, but his foul rate's still above 4.5 fouls per 36 minutes. So I took the under on that. You took the over. I jinxed them. I did this big story on them on TomTheFinder.com saying like, wow, what an amazing job they're doing starting two rookies. And then the Knicks, you know, did the Knicks and destroyed them, which is what the Knicks are doing a lot lately, is just destroying other teams.
It's wild, truly wild to have a Knicks team led by its unbeatable offense. Not exactly the way that I'm used to watching Knicks basketball, but, you know, there's all sorts of unexpected victories this season. Like, for example, me beating Tom Haberstroh in an over-under competition. What do we got for the over-unders this week?
I knew you were going there, and we're going to go with three new over-unders because I got to make up some ground here. I am chasing right now. I am chasing. It is not a good idea. I should not be doing this, but I'm adding three more. I feel like I'm on Uncut Gems right now. I'm going to add three more over-unders here because I'm so far behind. I need to catch up and make up ground. We're going to do over-under 0.5 triple-doubles the rest of the season. Get these guys off the schneid. First one is Paolo Banchero. Do you think that Paolo Banchero is going to have a triple-double the rest of the season? Yes or no? A 0.5 over-under, Dan.
I'm going to go under, and not because Paolo Banchero is not a fantastic player. It's because he works in an ecosystem where nobody can make baskets. Since he came back from his oblique injury, he is averaging 4.6 assists per game, hasn't had more than 7 assists in a game. He's up to 10.4 potential assists per game, but again, he's passing to guys who just aren't making shots. And I don't think that's like a cold snap. I think it's the way the Magic are. Here's a fun one for you, Tom. The Magic are shooting 32.2% on catch and shoot shots as a team. Catch and shoot. So you get the ball in rhythm and you put it right up. That is not only dead last in the NBA this season, it is on pace to be the worst catch-and-shoot number of any team since they installed the tracking cameras in 2012. So unless they warm up in Orlando, so Central Florida experiences a thaw here in terms of the catch-and-shoot numbers and the outside shooting, I think that Paolo's not going to have enough guys making baskets to get up above the triple-double number. So give me the under on Paolo.
I'm taking the over. If they get a shooter, that's all it takes. If Cam Johnson goes to Orlando, doesn't that change your calculus a little bit?
It does, but I feel like I've been waiting for Orlando to trade for a shooter for like 3 years, and it hasn't happened yet. Like, I think I've like seen the Photoshop of Anfernee Simons in a Magic jersey more times than I've seen Anfernee Simons in a Blazers jersey. So I don't know. If it happens, then yes, we can certainly revise this, and you will look like a genius. But I'll believe the Magic lean into shooting when I see it.
Okay, so I'm going to go over. You mentioned Anfernee Simons there. I do the broadcast with Kevin Calabro and Lamar Hurd and Brooke Olsendam for the Blazers.
A wonderful
games.
Broadcast, and, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And the Emmy right here, that's what it's for, is for that broadcast. Shout out to Greg Fonseca, our producer, who made that happen. I do want to say I covered the game where the Blazers held the Magic to 79 points in the year 2025. 79 points. So I've seen it with my own two eyes, the horrible shooting from Orlando, but I still believe that they will get, you know, a Cam Johnson type in there that will help them, not just with the shooting, but more importantly, get Paolo Banchero more than 0.5 triple doubles the rest of the way. Let's add another one to the list. I know he just got injured, turned his ankle, and he seems to keep popping up a lot, but, and I know you're like, wait, which player is he talking about here? There's a lot of guys who have ankle injuries. LaMelo Ball. He had triple-doubles in his career. Same with Paolo Banchero, but has 0 triple-doubles this season. I'm going to take the under on LaMelo Ball triple-doubles. What say you?
I kind of hemmed and hawed on this one. I'm going to go over, not just because I dislike you and want to disagree with you, although that's part of it.
Well,
but it's also,
I did put that paragraph in my column this week saying I hate Dan Devine. So
I know, it's buried in there. Only a fine-toothed comb can find it. It's really a good way to find out if I'm reading your stuff. But like the glass half empty side is that he just, as you said, mentioned, just suffered the ankle injury, and like the Hornets season again is already over. They're, I think, 12-31. They're not playing for anything. They've already lost Brandon Miller for the season. This might be the opportunity to kind of quietly shuffle LaMelo out and say, you know, we'll take our lumps the rest of the season. But I'm also a dusty old washed sports writer who apparently is like the exact demographic that dislikes LaMelo Ball most. And I want to buck that. I want to feel young. I want to be part of the zeitgeist and the youth movement. So I'm just going to vote. I'm going to go positive. I'm choosing joy here and saying that LaMelo is going to come back. He's going to rebound the ball. He's going to distribute it. It's going to look like real basketball, and it's going to be great. And even if it doesn't necessarily look like real basketball that results in wins, he just got to get the numbers. And I mean, LaMelo Ball does nothing if not get the numbers. So give me the over on LaMelo Ball coming back and putting up a triple-double before the end of the season.
Okay. So you're saying over because of Josh Okogie, right? Like, that's it. Like, that's the reason.
Josh
he gets
Okogie,
traded
though.
To Charlotte, and now you're saying the big bubble of Josh Okogie's season is going to happen for LaMelo Ball when he comes back from his ankle injury. I get it. I'm still
it's
going under.
What I'm saying.
I'm chasing joy long term. I say, hey, don't rush him back. You want LaMelo Ball to be healthy long term? Strengthen those hips, strengthen those glutes. It's all in the hips. And make sure that he does the Stephen Curry thing, gets healthier. And don't worry about rushing him back this season. Don't worry about those triple doubles. Just worry about making yourself a stable rock of the foundation going forward. And you know what? Make me look smart for taking the under on LaMelo Ball triple doubles 0.5 for the rest of the season. Last one here, Joel Embiid 0.5. Again, this is a bet on health as much as it is on productivity. What say you on Joel Embiid? Let's see if we zig and zag on all three of these.
Yeah, this is another one where I know my brain is telling me don't anticipate the return. I'm going to take the over. It's an emotional hedge. I want to see Joel come back. I want to believe he's going to get back on the court. And then when he gets back on the court, he's going to play great. Basically, even when he has not been fully healthy, which he hasn't all season, when he's been on the court, he's still been pretty to really good. Even like a bad Joel Embiid is still better than most players in the world. I choose to believe that he is going to be able to get back. We saw him warming up. I think he had like the sweatpants on underneath the game shorts. So that was a little bit of an interesting look. But he actually like on the court doing some stuff before the Lakers game the other day. I'm remaining hopeful that the Sixers, in an environment where it's like them, the Bulls, the Hawks, now that they've lost Jalen Johnson, like everybody's kind of scrambling in 9, 10, 11. Nobody maybe really wants to be in the play-in, but they maybe all can't get away from it. Maybe Joel gets healthy enough, the Sixers can get together and make a run, make something happen, and along the way he dishes some dimes. I'll take the over.
Yeah, going under here. It all sounds great. It all sounds great. I just don't feel confident that they have enough shooting. Paul George is doing a little bit better, I think, with his three-point shot recently. He's up to, I think, 36-37% from downtown. Of course, Maxey, good three-point shooter, but I just don't see it with him. He needs a lot of reps to get to a triple-double. He might have a 10% chance of getting a triple-double in any given game. Does he have 10 more games in the rest of the season? I'm not sure. So I'm going to take the under based on just I don't feel confident in his body holding up for the rest of the season. So I'm going to go under on LaMelo, under on Joel Embiid, and over on Banchero.
And we'll see. Flipping all of that.
Yeah. And we'll see if this is what is the rally that is going to make this happen. Make me take the lead over you in the over-under scoreboard of the season. It's 16-14. We'll see what happens next week. And we'll see what happens. You know, we got the trade deadline coming around. We got this triple-double story we're doing here. De'Aaron Fox totally, totally called that. We'll just do a couple of seconds here on De'Aaron Fox. Now that we know that he is, you know, basically made a trade demand that is making it let it be known that he wants to get out of Sacramento. We did a big number on this a couple weeks ago. And I said, I think his time is done in Sacramento. I get it. It feels like that was a little premature to say that. But when Rich Paul is meeting with the front office and you're not making that extension and there's a coaching change. Now we're hearing how close Fox was with Mike Brown. Think the writing was on the wall, and now we're seeing it. Dan, what was your reaction when you saw that De'Aaron Fox breaking news that he was essentially made letting it be known that he wants out of Sacramento and wants to go to a certain destination.
Yeah. Well, my first thought was, I bet I know what the destination is. There's a great big French guy there. And the second thought that I had was
Billy Yabusele.
Yeah, that's exactly it's Yabu. Exactly right. It's like more width than height there. But yes, the other reaction that I had was when we did that episode, my first thought was, I don't know, it feels like moving off of him because you have been playing better with Fox being hurt and like you've found something in the two-man game with Malik Monk and Sabonis, and maybe there's a way to retrofit the like. It felt a little bit like you're maybe getting too cute trying to move off of an all-star All-NBA player just because it's the numbers in a short sample have looked pretty good. It didn't occur to me, or I didn't think about it at that point, that maybe the call would be coming from the other end, like that Fox might be saying, since you guys gave me the keys and you brought in Sabonis, we haven't really added like any 3-and-D guys. We haven't put the right kind of pieces around the two of us together to maximize and to make us more competitive in the West. When you guys fired Mike Brown, you really left me holding the bag in public, like to where I had to tell people on the record, off the record, whatever, like it wasn't me. I didn't do it. And then like didn't really speak to what happened there. Maybe at a certain point, you're just like, he was just looking at it and saying, this might not be where I want to be in the long term, right? So I was thinking about it more from it would be premature for the team to make that decision. I didn't consider maybe that he would just decide that the time's up. And evidently, that is a choice that he has come to. And then just other thing, I didn't think this right away, but I looked it up afterwards because I was curious. Since our episode, Fox averaging 19 points on 38% shooting in 36 minutes a game, 33% from three-point land. So it's not exactly like he has come back to the lineup since our discussion and looked like a house on fire, even as the Kings surge under Doug Christie. And maybe the more relevant, big-ish number here is in that span, these last handful of games, Kings are about 19 points per 100 when they've got Sabonis, Monk, and DeMar DeRozan on the court and De'Aaron Fox off it. Wow. So maybe we're looking at this as the direction that the Kings are going to, whether it's smart or not, and whether, you know, getting here was avoidable or not, this might be the direction that things are going.
That is a great stat. Well, not great for De'Aaron Fox, but certainly I did not know that it was that wide of a gap there with him off the floor. And
small
those guys
sample
on.
Size caveats, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, this is what we're looking at.
That's going to do it for us today here on The Big Number. As always, go subscribe, rate 5 stars. It really helps. Leave a comment, please. We appreciate it, especially if it's go Tom, go beat Dan, beat Dan. That would be really
I hate that
very,
idea.
Very
don't
appreciative
do that.
On my end. Yeah, he'll fight you. Thanks to Emmy and the entire team that works very hard behind the scenes on this podcast. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Subscribe to The Big Number wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a rating, a review. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, have a great weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Be good.